Hello and welcome to Out to Lunch, where I take fascinating people for a slap-up meal and we record the chat. My guest today has taken an unfashionable art form and turned it on its head. Her comedy uses ventriloquism. Puppets and masks allow her or her audience to say what they would never normally say. She explores what it's like to be a ruder, naughtier and more chaotic self. She's been on Live at the Apollo in QI, toured the UK, and has an award-winning film, Her Master's Voice, on Amazon. In this chat, we talk about cooking lunch for Arthur Miller, learning the art of speaking without moving your lips, and giving up acting for a talking monkey. It's the inimitable Nina Conti, and if I can persuade her, monkey as well.
So it was just monkey, like, going at it on a pint glass, and me kind of...
being outraged or trying to stop him.
Part outraged, but part, it's just like an affable zookeeper, like, he'll do this, it won't last long.
So for this episode of Out to Lunch, we've come to the Intercontinental Hotel on London's Park Lane, which is home to Theo Randall at the Intercontinental. He's a brilliant, robust Italian cook, was the head chef at the River Cafe for many years, then opened here 15 years ago. Nina Conti is vegetarian and he does a lot of great non-meat cookery, so I thought this was a good fit. At the moment, Theo Randall is not open at lunchtime as we speak. I think it probably is by now when you're listening. But he agreed to open for me and for Nina Conti and for Out to Lunch because we are that important. Let's get inside. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, Nina. Come on in.
Look at this.
I know. We have a what they call a PDR, private dining room for
very
you.
Very nice.
This is Brendan who'll be serving us.
Hello.
Hi.
My name is Brendan.
Nice to meet you.
This is Out to Lunch.
Yes.
And obviously we're going to be eating. Have you ever attempted to master, or whatever the word would be, the art of drinking and eating while ventriloquizing? Is there any way to do it?
Well, I don't know. I could give it a go. I have done on stage a drinking, talking thing, but it's, you know, it's a bit of trickery around how it's
all
done.
It's all trickery.
Shall I just tell you what it is?
Yeah, tell us the trick.
So you have this stuff which is a bit like what is in baby's nappies, which is powder and very fast absorbent. So you need an opaque cup. You have a little of that pre-prepared in the cup, and then you pour water in front of people into the cup. It goes completely solid, and then you lift it, and then he's talking, and you're just...
Because you're not drinking, because it's been completely solid.
I mean, the quality of your mic might change as you go into the cavity, but people don't notice.
So we have a vegetarian menu for you.
Thank you.
So, what do you fancy?
I love burrata.
Yeah, their burrata will be very, very good.
Oh, it looks really good. And that deep-fried violet aubergines looks very good.
Yeah, I noticed that. It's a very Roman dish.
Are you ready
to order? I am. Yeah. Could I have the burrata, please?
Nice choice.
And then the aubergine.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Can I have the cuttlefish and just apologise to Theo, because I had it last time, but I really like it. And then I'll have the lobster linguine, because my luck, yeah, as a main course. And he'd probably send them anyway, but could we get some of the courgette fritti for the table?
To start with, right?
Yeah, they can arrive whenever. That'd be brilliant. Thank you. Your dad is Tom Conti, the actor, so I should probably put that on the tape.
Yeah.
What he said, you moved from Kilburn to Hampstead when you're about 11.
Yes.
I remember very, very well the point when your father's career sort of exploded.
Yeah, there was a sudden augmentation because they were poor when they came to London, and my dad was playing the guitar in restaurants to tables and for tips.
Did you? Was that what encouraged you into the idea of a career in showbiz, theatre?
What, seeing it having gone well?
Well, it did go well.
Yeah.
So, we have some bruschetta with the tiny tomatoes and focaccia as an appetizer to start with.
Thank you.
That's very pretty, isn't it?
Mmm. Very pretty.
Was there pressure from your parents? Were they saying, just get a skill behind you?
Yeah, something to fall back on. And because it hadn't gone well for all his Glasgow mates, who sort of were house guests a lot and kind of drunk house guests that I'd grown up with.
Yeah, explain who the house guests were.
I'm not going to name them.
Well, not the drunk ones, but you did have these ridiculous people. Didn't Arthur Miller come for dinner?
Oh, yes. Yeah, that was later, yeah.
David Bowie?
And I cooked for Arthur Miller. I went to Cordon Bleu when I was 14, and I cooked. So I made a rack of lamb which I'd eaten at Langan's, and I tried to reproduce it, and it was the most stressful thing for a 14-year-old or 15-year-old girl to go through.
And how did the author of Death of a Salesman take it?
Politely.
Oh, well, that's nice.
He ate it politely, yeah.
Do you know the great story about him taking Marilyn to meet his mother?
No.
All right, this is a good story. So Arthur Miller takes Marilyn Monroe to meet his mother, wherever he'd installed her, on the Upper East Side or whatever, and at some point she needs to go to the loo, but she is concerned about being overheard. So she turns on all the taps to disguise the noise. And the next day, Arthur Miller calls his mother and says, "What do you think of Marilyn?" And she goes, "Nice girl, but she pisses like a horse."
Oh, that's great.
Did you train as an actor?
No.
But you got to the RSC, didn't you?
Yeah, but I didn't get deep into the RSC. I got fringe parts, you know, on the players'
cast. Harry Spears and...
That stuff.
Was there wenches in Shakespeare plays?
Yeah, I was a one wench, actually. That was my biggest part, because she had some lines.
Even, you know, spear carrying at the RSC, it's still the RSC.
Mm-hmm.
Did you hear there was an audition?
If I went to drama school, it was the drama school of Ken Campbell.
So explain who Ken Campbell was to anybody who didn't know.
Ken Campbell, you might see him, 40 Towers. He's bald with bushy eyebrows, and he was a maverick, kind of radical kind of... He was sort of pissed off with the theatre scene, so everything he did was a bit different. And he had been at drama school with John Cleese and the like in his year, but he went the black sheep way, other way, you know, and did weird things. And I'd seen his plays at the National. He did one-man shows at the National. And I just turned up without part and hung around until one of the actresses had a kind of mental breakdown. I got her part.
What, you literally hung around in the green room? Or was it because you'd been there?
Yeah, it wasn't a normal rehearsal either. It was happening in Fatty Towers, which was Buster Blood Vessels, Margate, Hotel for the Morbidly Obese. That was the tagline of the place. And that was where the rehearsals were. So if you could get a ticket down to Margate and, I don't know, you'd sleep on a floor with someone else, we took over the whole hotel. And the rehearsals went right through the night to about 5 a.m.
And this was Ken Campbell's method at the time.
That was Ken Campbell's method. And you had to have a sort of... like a hypnosis when you arrive, which they called an induction. I mean, it was weird. It was weird, but I'd enjoy...
Are you saying you joined a cult?
It was very much a cult. But I'd enjoyed his one-man shows at the National so much, I thought, well, he must know what he's doing. He's not completely bonkers, but everything was weird, yeah.
Did your relationship with him start there?
No, not at all. Took a while. I sort of did decide to seduce him, even though I was 25. He was almost 60, I think. I thought, I'll just go in there as close as I can, learn everything I can and get out, you know, but I need some of that ingredient. I haven't had that in my Hampstead upbringing, you know.
And the obvious way to do that was to
get sex,
go to bed with him. Was he just hugely charismatic?
His charisma was an acquired taste. His brain was fast, frightening. And that was what was so brilliant. That's what I wanted to be around. But I feel like I had an agency in going about that, definitely.
But it's a choice which has, I would say, echoed down the years. It's shaped your whole life.
Yeah, it did. It really did. I mean, I think if your parents are successful in what they do, and my dad's career as an actor and everything, if I was just going to be going to auditions and hopefully getting parts and playing sort of straight leading ladies, I don't even know if I could ever have done that, I had to go and find another string to my bow, and it kind of had to be an eccentric one.
Oh, look, zucchini fritti.
Lovely.
Here we go.
Thank you.
Or courgettes, deep fried, and they're really good. They're really good. At what point did he say, you need something else in your life, and here's Ventriloquism for Beginners, or whatever the kit was called?
The Royal Shakespeare Company... voice coach, Sis Berry, said, well, you know, there are two kinds of voices, and one I can listen to and the other I just shut off, and you've got to make yours one I can listen to.
It should be said, just for context, that Sis Berry was regarded as the greatest voice coach in Britain, wasn't she?
Yes,
she had this legendary status.
Very much so.
So she basically said, I can't listen to you. Yeah. You were being told you're shit as a human being, pretty much.
Yeah. Anyway, I told Ken this. He said, well, I know how to make you a vocal acrobat, but you've got to promise to put in some work every day, and I'll send it to you, but you have to promise you'll work at it first.
He hadn't told you what it was?
No. And I said, OK, I'll give it a go. And then at stage door, this big hairy sort of dog puppet and a box that had things to keep your mouth still and booklets to read and everything turned up. And my heart sank.
If we look back at what was around, you know what the names are. We've got
Orville. Well, I wasn't even thinking of Orville when I was thinking this isn't my cup of tea. What I had in mind was kind of horror film, your worst nightmare kind of guy. Nasty slices from the edge of the mouth down and head movement, eye movement. And so I was talking to that puppet for a while. It was lascivious. It was like saucy and it was unfunny. And I was just thinking, why is my material going down this road? I don't want this. Later, I found Monkey and he made it.
Where did you find Monkey?
Also, while at the Royal Shakespeare, I had been sharing a flat with an actor called Will Houston, who was playing Henry V. And on his first night, his mum bought him a monkey puppet. And that is my monkey. I stole it. So
You stole it from Will Houston?
Yeah, stole it from Will Houston. He did send me a Facebook message saying that's my fucking monkey. Sure, I don't think he minds that much.
So you had Monkey before Ken encouraged you to get into ventriloquism?
Yes, so it was more the beginning of the season, the first night of the show. I had met this monkey, I suppose. And then towards the end of the RSC season, that's when Sis Berry was giving up on me. He said, you've got to learn ventriloquism. And then that was when I thought, oh, but maybe that monkey will work well as a puppet.
There's an extraordinary moment, and you probably know where I'm going with this, in Her Master's Voice, is the documentary you want to watch, and it's available on Amazon, where you're lying in bed with the Ken Campbell puppet.
Mm.
And the Ken Campbell puppet says, you had an abortion. At the point when that baby would have been born, Monkey arrives, so he's your son.
Yeah. You're going to put your son in a box and leave him there for the rest of your life. That's what I remember. Saying all that. Obviously, I was saying it, not Ken. I was the one.
Well,
we
do know how the ventriloquism thing works, and I'm looking at that going, you couldn't have said that.
No, I couldn't have said that. But nor could Ken, because Ken wouldn't even know that. I know that. So the Ken puppet knows that. So the Ken puppet says that.
I mean, this is an outrageous question. So it wasn't Ken's?
No.
Okay.
It was exactly the time frame, an abortion, and then 9 months later, I started doing that.
We got the email from your management saying, would you like to meet Monkey?
The bastards, did they say that? Because I think that's really a weird idea, don't you?
We can leave him in there for the moment. I mean, there was a bit of me watching all your material, and I was thinking, is Nina going to be able to talk to me?
Without him?
Without him or without... Oh, I think we have starters arriving. You're saved. No, you're not. Tell us what we've got, Brendan.
So we have our fresh burrata with farinata, Swiss chard, green peppers, tajuski olives and basil. And we have the pan-fried cuttlefish with anchovies, red chili, borlotti beans and a little bit of rocket.
Thank you.
Yeah, some contexts don't work. I mean, stage definitely works, but...
You don't think it's possible to eat lunch?
One-on-one, I find it a bit weird.
Do you?
The monkey, yeah. But when I'm on my own on stage, when it's my context, that's... yeah.
So is that part of it? You need to control the environment that you're...
I need total control, yeah. I need to be queen bee, no one else near. No one else funny anywhere near me, please.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Because you're meant to be the funny person, or monkey is, or... Well, Granny's now in a home...
Yeah, she's in Vent Haven, a resting place for the dummies of dead ventriloquists.
Which is one of the most sinister things I've ever seen, if I may. and again, Her Master's Voice is the documentary you want to watch. Vent Haven Museum is just...
Yeah.
Ventriloquists die in there.
And they sit there on their chairs, these puppets, and they've lost their voices, and they... Some of them have photographs of them on stage mid-animation, and it feels more dead than dead.
Hello, it's Ollie here. I'm the executive producer on Out to Lunch. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Now, one of the relationships I'm proudest of in my life is with my daughters. They're not quite the age to go for fancy lunches with celebs yet, but we do enjoy our family dinners together in relative harmony. You know, give us time, that they are still quite young. But this takes work, and it's a mistake to think that relationships have to be easy to be right. The best relationships come out of learning to live with each other and keeping our sense of humour, even when food is spilt all over the table or dinner's not to everyone's liking. It can be really tricky, but therapy can help you with those skills. You can work through parenting challenges, explore seeing eye to eye as a couple, and work through your relationship with yourself too. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's flexible and you can switch therapists at any time, as that's a relationship that needs to be the right fit too. Become your own soulmate, whether you're looking for one or not. Visit betterhelp.com/outtolunch today and get 10% off your first month.
The actual technical stuff, did it come to you pretty quickly?
Yes. That's why I stuck with it, because the first time I started trying to do it, I did a good job of just relaxing my face and keeping it completely still. And so when I watched back this little video I'd made, I thought that really is like someone else was there.
And you realised there was this thing that you could do?
Yeah, and that there was this separation and then suddenly this liberation of something that could say all your uncensored thoughts and you didn't really have to explain it. Or it was also kind of flirty, I think. There's something weirdly flirty about it, because if you're all the time or brought up to be butter wouldn't melt, and then this other thing says these awful things, it kind of baffles people.
There's one thing, learning the technique. Mm-hmm. There's another thing, getting a gig and getting up on stage and doing it. What was your first ventriloquist gig?
The important thing was I booked myself into a new act competition night at the Bedford in Balham.
The Banana Club?
Yeah, the Banana Club on a Tuesday. So it was just monkey, like, going at it on a pint glass, and me kind of...
being like, outraged or trying to stop him?
Part outraged, but part... it's just like an affable zookeeper, like, he'll do this. It won't last long, you know. Well, sorry about this. And I hadn't realised, really, that it was time to write my own material. I was thinking, well, I've got monkey. That's what I'd look for, monkey jokes on the internet. That's how I began. I mean, it's really shameful. And it won the night. But I was so frightened before, because it was like quite confident dudes in jeans and white T-shirts holding mics being like quite rad. When I get asked about being a woman in comedy, I think there was a survival technique about the strongly masculine monkey voice.
Was there any response to this? Did your dad have PTSD remembering his days as a guitarist around the restaurants?
Yeah, probably. Probably. I think he'd had a joke about becoming a ventriloquist. He'd always said, should I just become a ventriloquist? Apparently to my mum, it was some running gag I didn't understand. So they thought it was hysterical that I was doing ventriloquism. I mean, I think my dad's a bit appalled at the amount of swearing that comes out of the monkey and finds the monkey quite vile, like a vile character. I don't think monkey's vile. I think he's nice. I mean, he says awful things, but I think his soul's intact. He's kind of, okay, monkey.
The psychological stuff, I mean, working out where you end and the voices from your head begin, mm-hmm. you play a double game, which is monkey will say, this isn't me speaking, it's her.
Yes.
But he says things, particularly, you know, if you watch In Therapy, which was a brilliant... conceit, which is you with your monkey and a therapist, an actor.
He's very good, isn't he? Adam Megiddo.
Brilliant. And monkey saying everything, and you're saying outrageous things, and your head is in your hands most of the time, in shame.
Yeah.
So I know this may sound like a banal question. How much of it is an act, and how much of it is extremely liberating for you?
I think both in equal measure. I don't think I would do an act without that factor.
How did you find, it's a question, you know, the whole lockdown thing, of not being on stage?
Yeah, I was very upset.
Were you?
Yeah. The thing I had been cultivating the most for the last sort of 6 years was unscripted audience participation shows, where I would make the show up on the night using people from the audience. It was so tactile. It was so
is this unhygienic. Using the half face masks?
Yes.
Powered by you, you're basically moving their lips.
Yes, but I've got work in progress shows starting very soon. So my idea was that I would be like Cilla Black and I would get people up from the audience who were looking to meet a partner and I'd put masks on them and we'd have dates. In fact, that's not a bad idea. I could just do that, but I started to think it's going to be a bit prescribed, or it might be a bit icky, or you might just get people kind of being like overly sexual and it'd be kind of icky.
When you say overly sexual, surely it's you. So if it did get overly sexual, that wouldn't be them, it would be you.
Yes, but do you know what people do often is they do a kind of four move with the thrusting.
And you've got no choice. Thing.
Yeah, and then often you get blokes doing like a, imagining there's a woman in front of them, they're kind of doing the arse slap and the hair pulling. That's what people do. They do that kind of rodeo move. That often happens. And every time that happens, I'm like, God. The audience don't laugh at it. They're just kind of like, ugh.
But that's the problem. You are entrusting the success of your act to members of the public.
Yes.
Nina, what are you doing?
I know. Well, then I sort of what follows is more interesting in sort of their crestfallen that it hasn't gone as well as they thought. And so you're voicing that agonising about, was that too much? Did I do it? What do you think it was that they didn't like about it? I mean, you just have to keep it going. But the thing is, they didn't say it. I said it. So if I've got a woman telling her boyfriend she thinks she can do better and she doesn't love him anymore.
Have you done that?
I might have done things like that.
You have done that.
I probably have done that, you know, and it's a riot. And usually the girl is laughing more than anyone if that's the kind of thing.
Whilst the boyfriend is dying a little inside because there's a kernel of him in there that thinks that's actually the truth.
And everybody knows it actually might be. I don't know. There was one woman who had been with her husband, I don't know, they'd been together 40 years or something and travelled with his work. This was at the Kiln Theatre in Kilburn. And she had been following him around, making home anew every time they moved.
Right.
But she was on stage and I'd already found out that that's what she did and he was there. And so I let the mask let rip at him for this amount of courtesy she'd been giving him all these years, and for what, you know, she really laid into him, and she afterwards hugged me and said, thank you.
Oh my God.
Yeah, yeah, funny. So
you got her to say what she could not say for herself.
Yes, what they both probably knew. But I don't know, maybe she did say it, but it had more charm and thrill or silliness about it, probably, with this mask on her face. She looked like a monster, you know.
Yeah, we should say it is a big outsized thing, which sort of looks almost, Botoxed lip-wise.
Yes.
Every day in America, 60 million packages are delivered, but we don't always know what's inside.
He bent down to pick the package up. That's when the device detonated.
Danger is everywhere, and no one is safe in Austin, Texas, as law enforcement hunts a serial bomber for 19 days. From Sony Music Entertainment, Campside Media, and Pegalo Pictures, this is Witnessed. 19 Days. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts to binge all episodes or listen weekly wherever you get your podcasts.
Monkey, you got him because he was delivered to your housemate at the RSC.
Mm.
Did the voice come very, very early on?
Yes, a version of it. He used to speak a lot more slowly, like Nina. That was a bit spooky, but I remember the first time I filmed him, I was a little drunk. I'd been at the pub and I came home and the house was empty and, you know, sort of the nervous of being alone kind of person. I was thinking, oh God, has the party ended? Am I really all by myself? I better populate things around here. I'll put a camera on and I'll get a monkey puppet and I'll start talking. But that was the first time I picked up Monkey and realised that Monkey could be something I could use in ventriloquism.
Look, they're taking a while with our main courses. So I'm going to make you.
Oh, what, talk to him?
Yeah.
Is that hearing a voice without seeing him.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I feel like it's going to be an anti-climax.
I don't think so.
Maybe not.
Just for staginess, because it is out to lunch.
Look what he got me, a banana. Yeah.
Is that patronising?
Well, I can't do much with it. I can't swallow. But it doesn't mean I don't suck good dick. Just the tip.
You see, it's happened already, isn't it?
I can't do much with that.
Can you not? Well, I mean, obviously, I'm aware that you're a puppet. And
do you want to heal it and feed it to me? Is that what you want? Deep in your psyche?
I think it's necessary. Look,
Don't get me sticky. Not that way.
Terrible. Actually, our food has arrived.
Thank God for that.
Monkey's going away.
Save you again.
That's a funny thing.
Thank you.
Wow, this is huge. Look at this. That'll be exciting.
We have here our fritto misto di verdura, so you're going to have some zucchine, then courgette, a little bit of aubergine. You have portobello mushrooms, artichokes, all topped up with a little bit of chili and mint sauce.
How lovely, thank you.
And I'm going for this.
Yeah, that looks good.
Dorset blue lobster, arrived fresh today, with the parsley, garlic, and red chili.
Marvellous. Thank you. In the film, I'm going back to it, but in the film, there is a, if I call it a conceit, I don't know if I'm being unfair, which is that you are thinking about giving up being a ventriloquist.
Oh, I was.
Were you genuine?
Yeah, I was. Because I made that film with my own money. I couldn't get anyone interested to give me money to do it. So, and I had Ken speaking at me from the grave going, you don't need anyone, just go and do it yourself, do it yourself. So I just did it. Very cheaply with my own money, and then managed to sell it to the BBC, and then did well after that.
You got a Grierson Award for it.
Yeah, there was a kind of thing of ventriloquism are not really going to work on television. It's what everyone was saying. So after I made that film, it proved that it worked fine, and then I started getting more gigs, and then I got Live at the Apollo, and then it sort of lifted me up a bit.
There's a particular moment in one of your acts where you get Monkey to put you into a trance, and you go into a trance, and the end result is you can't speak.
Yeah.
Because Monkey is you.
Yeah.
Which was also what the whole of In Therapy was about.
Yes.
Which means you're about as self-referential and meta as it comes.
Yeah. Yes, I guess I am. Yes, I find that's where it's most interesting.
How far can you take that?
I mean, it would be to do a sort of black box theatre, me in a polo neck and bare feet as Monkey.
Being Monkey?
Yeah, no puppets, no costume, just, you know, that's as far as I could take it, but I don't think anyone wants that, at least of all me.
You've done a little bit of it. There are moments where you do, it's just your hand.
Yeah.
And then the voice transfers into you, and that's really freaky.
And I got into a monkey suit for a while. That was really fun. I did some stand-up as Monkey, wearing a monkey suit.
You've been working on a book.
Yeah.
For about 3 years.
Yeah, about 3 years.
Partly written in your voice, partly written in Monkey's voice. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Which is easier to write?
Mine's easier to write, but it's more likely to drift into sort of narcissism or something. Or it's more like thinking, oh, people will like this, or I'll choose this word, or I'll try and be... You know, it's more pretentious than Monkey's voice, who, as soon as I sort of switch and think, well, what would Monkey say now... It cuts it down to size. But then I don't want to do that all the time because it would be relentless. So sometimes I just hand over to the monkey voice completely.
Why is it taking you so long?
I don't sit for long periods of time well. It's really uncomfortable because you don't want to bullshit. And it's so hard not to. Or to anticipate what other people are thinking. So I think the key is probably what the monkey part of my brain can do is write it for its own sake as if no one's ever going to look at it anyway. And that's how I get it done. I've got to get on with it. And stop talking about it till it's done. Honestly, that's what I have to do. I've eaten a lot of these. Would you like any of them?
What have you got in there?
There's mushroom. That I've started on that, but really? this one...
Well, I don't really care.
Okay.
Oh, that's a Swiss chard leaf, isn't it? It's the amazing ability of the Italians to deep fry anything.
It does improve most things, gives them a crunch, doesn't it?
It really does. That's fantastic.
What's that? That's a radicchio.
I'm going to force you to do something which is probably unfair, which is to get Monkey out again.
What are we getting him out for? As
you're here,
yeah.
How do you think this has actually gone?
You got the abortion stuff out early, didn't you? So you started hot. And then it kind of trailed off a bit two-thirds of the way through because the food didn't come, nor did the witty remarks. And I think we can close it well now, but shit, let's quit while we're ahead.
Do you think? I mean, that's the thing. I mean, you never know how it's going to go when you're... sitting over food?
No, I've never done it before myself. I don't know, I was face down, arse up in the bag. Sounded okay.
It was good, it was good. It was very, very good. And obviously when we edit it down to 40 minutes, it's going to be spectacular.
Oh, that's really good.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, who does that? Do you do that? You don't do that.
No, no, I have people.
Yes.
Monkey. All that remains for me to say, Nina Conti and Monkey, while you try to pull on some of the tempura from Nina's plate, is thank you for letting me take you out to lunch. Throwing food, that has actually got a hint of the Rod Hull and Emus. About.
Yeah, I know. So never been invited to lunch before. This is how
yeah,
I
and I'm here to tell you that I'm not sure that necessarily you're going to get many more invitations.
Yeah, it's a fancy establishment, Monkey. Don't say that. Here we go.
Right.
Did you see the way that courgette went flying across the room?
Yeah, all I can say is that Brendan, our brilliant waiter, has watched as food has gone flying. And I don't think anybody has thrown food at Theo Randall at the Intercontinental across the private dining room before. So, Monkey, congratulations.
Thank you.
On completely vulgarising the whole business of going out to lunch with me.
Thank you, I'm delighted.
It's been fabulous.
Thank you.
Well, that's the first time I've had to pick up my guest's lunch from the floor, but it was worth it. Thank you so much to Theo Randall at the Intercontinental Hyde Park. We promise the antics were in no way a reflection on your delicious food. Do please remember to follow us so that you can hear new episodes as soon as they drop. Share us with everyone you know. Comment, give us 5 stars. You know, it makes sense. It all helps us to keep making these. Out to Lunch is a Something Else and Jay Rayner production. The music was written, arranged and performed by me, Jay Rayner, and Robert Rickenberg. The recording engineer was Paul Brogdon and the mix engineer was John Scott. Assistant producers are Anya Das and Bethany Hocken. The producer is Selena Ream and the executive producer is Darby Doris. Next time, it's classical scholar, broadcaster and writer Dame Professor Mary Beard on stage with me at the Cambridge Club Festival.
I did some of those things that you did in the 1970s that we would frown upon. You know, sex, drugs and rock and roll, yeah, sure. But most of my time in Cambridge, what I remember is the library, actually.